Thank you. We'll call the final matter on our oral argument calendar here this morning. Scott Mathias, appellant versus the Ann Lee Coleman Living Trust, court file 820-0337. We're a few minutes late starting here. Counsel for appellant has not appeared this morning, nor did he make an appearance at the practice session that was offered for these arguments. So should he appear during the course of the arguments, we'll attempt to accommodate that. But at this point, it appears as though he's waived oral argument in the matter by his non-appearance here today. And so we will proceed with the argument of respondent. Mr. Orman has appeared on behalf of the respondent here, and you will have 15 minutes for your oral argument, Mr. Orman. Should Mr. Mathias appear, I may interrupt you and kind of juggle our proceedings here a little bit, but should he not, then we'll proceed with your argument at this time. So Mr. Orman, you'll need to unmute yourself and you may proceed with your argument when you're ready.
Thank you. May it please the court, in these unusual times, I'm not going to use 15 minutes. I just want to note that this has been one of the most acrimonious matters I've ever participated in. It's been very expensive to the trust. It's an appeal from the order of Judge Johnson of January 7th, 2020. Scott Mathias has never abided during the term of this case to the settlement agreement, to the order from the district court. The latest order having to do with repairs at his sole expense, that is Scott Mathias's sole expense. The Social Security funds are supposed to be directed to the trust, never done. The supply, he's supposed to supply receipts, proof of whatever he's spending the money on. We've had numerous discussions in front of the court and otherwise, and the court has ordered him to
What is the remedy, to you, Mr. Orman, to, now you're not appealing, but I'm just curious, what, if any, remedy is there for the district court in the failure to direct the Social Security funds to the trustee?
Well, he'd be held in contempt. That's what we were attempting to do after the judge filed the January 2020 order. We made a motion to hold Mr. Mathias in contempt, and that's when he appealed.
Am I correct that the agreement, the settlement agreement between the parties, is memorialized only in the district court's order describing it? There was never a document that the parties signed?
Oh, no, that we actually had a signature of the settlement agreement.
Okay.
Before that order, absolutely.
Does the order? And I apologize, I don't have that. Is that in the addendum of either of the parties? I saw the district court's order memorializing the agreement, and that was described in the addendum as the agreement.
It actually is in Mr. Mathias's documents. So let me give me a half a second here and I'll try to find.
When that. You say in his documents, in the addendum?
Yeah, in the addendum. So it's, the agreement says that it's pages 12 through 17.
Right. And I look at that and I see the court's order, stipulated order for dismissal. So is this the memorialization that you're talking about?
This is the order, but there also is an agreement that we all signed on the,
okay.
on the day in court. I'm sorry, I'm not able to put my...
That's my okay. I'll take a look at it, but at least for the purposes of our oral argument before I get my hands on it, do you agree that the district court's description and its order for dismissal is accurate as to the terms that the parties agreed to?
Now we're talking about the order. Let me just get the
order that you just referred to.
Yeah, I'm just getting the date for the record.
Unfortunately, there's no date. It's just a signing.
05-02-2019 is on Judge Johnson's signature line.
I see it. And is that the, do you agree that this accurately memorializes the agreement of the parties?
Yes, along with the agreement, because the agreement is incorporated in this order.
All right. Unfortunately, I apologize. I thought this was all we had. So on page 16 of the addendum, Scott Mathias shall continue to be responsible for the house costs as set forth in the trust. Is this language taken from the agreement, as far as you recall? And we can check it, obviously, when we're not in the middle of arguing.
Yes, the agreement has, the agreement cites the trust section, which I believe is...
Article 7, Section 1. I just want to know whether, I mean, there's multiple documents here, and I've seen various descriptions, the trust agreement, the trust, the settlement agreement, and I'm just trying to get my, and then you've got this order. I just want to get my mind around this. I'm going to assume, for the purpose of my question, that this statement by the court on page 16 is an accurate statement as to what the agreement is. Scott Mathias shall continue to be responsible for the house costs as set forth in the trust. So here's my difficulty. I'm assuming that's the same language in the agreement the party signed.
And which paragraph number are you referring to?
I'm referring to the paragraph on page 16 that is the first full paragraph, the single sentence paragraph. It's on 16 of the...
Scott Mathias shall continue to be responsible of the house as set forth in the trust, Article 7, Section 1.
All right. So here's my problem.
Yeah.
And the way I'm thinking about it, I don't speak for the whole court. Of course, this is only my own thinking, but at least preliminarily, it seems to me that that's a bit ambiguous. Mathias shall be responsible for the house costs as set forth in the trust. But this is referring to the Ridgewood House, and the trust confers on him the duty to pay for the costs of the replacement house after the Ridgewood House is sold. Am I correctly understanding what the trust originally set forth to do, to cause a sale of the family home at the death of the settler, and then some of the proceeds would go into the trust principal and some of the other proceeds would go to purchase a home.
Yes.
And then those costs going forward for any repair costs to the home that was purchased would be either Mr. Mathias could pay those costs, or he could choose not to pay the costs, in which the trust could come in and say, fine, we're going to sell the house, because you haven't paid for the costs and you're going to be on your own to go buy your own house. Have I understood the terms of the original trust correctly?
Yeah, but let me just add a little bit.
All right.
Originally, the trust called for the sale of the Ridgewood Road house.
Yes.
It is a bigger house. Out of that proceeds, they're supposed to take $210,000 and buy a house.
Right.
I'm telling you this, I wasn't there. I wasn't the lawyer then, but I was hired shortly thereafter.
No, I've seen the trust. That's accurate.
And they went ahead and bought a house for them to live in. And then through Mr. Mathias, the lawyer, and Mr. Mathias, the father, they said, we're not moving. We don't want to be up in Woodland.
And they don't have to move.
Well, they had to move because the previous lawyer caused an eviction action.
Right. He has to move out of the Ridgewood house, but the trust can't require him to go move into a house he doesn't want to live in.
No. And that was part of the discussion. You can live wherever you want. Go buy yourself a house.
Right,
and take
right.
the kids with you.
So here's my problem. So I'm trying to figure out, okay, what does this mean as set forth in the trust? It seems to me what the district court was trying to do and what the parties were trying to do was not to create any new obligations, either on the part of the trust or the trust beneficiaries or Mr. Mathias, but trying to trying to forward the settlers' intent in making in this agreement as best as possible, given the fact that the Ridgewood home is not going to be sold under the agreement. Would you agree with that, that that was the intent of the parties to try to not to create any new burdens or financial obligations on anyone?
What they ultimately agreed to do is not have them leave the Ridgewood house.
No, I understand that.
To stay there and to make an agreement to that effect. And that is the agreement that is paired with the order that you're presently referring to. And that agreement lays out the responsibilities of Scott Mathias with respect to being able to stay in the Ridgewood house.
Well, that's why I was asking you whether this was an accurate description of what that requirement was. And on page 16, which is that he shall continue to be responsible for the house costs as set forth in the trust.
Correct.
Okay. So here's the deal as I see it.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but they're trying to transfer the deal that was set up by the mother to have another house at a lesser cost that Scott could raise the children in because he didn't have a house.
No, I understand that. I think that if maybe the marshal could check the computer, I think we've got bubbles instead of a clock. I want to thank you. everything's happened this morning, I guess. Okay, so here's what
I didn't notice.
Okay, so all right, so the district court says, no, you agreed, Mr. Mathias, to pay the costs. So by golly, you're going to pay the cost to fix the Ridgewood house. Right. Here's my problem with that. It's unclear to me whether some of those costs were for repairs that were designed to fix deficiencies that existed before he moved into the house.
I believe that that is true.
That's a problem.
In fact, that's true. And that is part of the agreement.
Well, hold on a second. That's a big problem for me. That's a really big problem for me. First of all, if this is the right language in the agreement, and I'll check the agreement as set forth in the trust, then right. There wasn't any intent to create a new burden on Mr. Mathias. So here's the deal. I'm going to, just for the sake of hypothetical, hold on a second, just for the sake of a hypothetical, if everything went forward as it was written in the trust, let's assume, I'm just going to grab a number out of thin air. I have no idea how much the house is worth, the Ridgewood house is worth. Let's assume if it were in perfect condition, if all the repairs were made at the time of the death and Mr. Mathias moved in, that house was worth, let's say, $400,000, okay? If it were in perfect repair, then the house would be sold at the time of death, the trust would get $400,000. And then from that $400,000 would use $210,000 to purchase a different home for the children to live in with Mr. Mathias. Are you tracking so far?
I am.
All right. So,
which was all in good repair, by the way. The $210,000 house was in.
Right, but that's a different question. Okay, so let's assume for the sake of my hypothetical, or the way I'm looking at this problem, that the house was worth $375,000 instead of $400,000, fair market value, because it wasn't in complete repair, that there were things that could be done to increase it. I mean, we all know this when we go to sell a house, right? We can put in a few thousand dollars and we'll get more bids on the house. But the assumption is we're going to get that money out when we sell the house. So we spend a few thousand dollars to bring it up to whatever it is, up to code, to improve things a little bit, just to make it more attractive to a buyer. Mr. Mathias would not have been responsible for any of those costs, any of those pre-sale costs of the home, the Ridgewood home. He wouldn't have moved into the home. The home would have been sold. And the only costs he would have been bound to carry forward are those repair costs of the new home, right?
Correct.
Okay. So if he's now responsible to pay for costs as set forth in the trust never was designed for him to pay for any repairs to the Ridgewood house if those repairs became necessary before the death. He would have only been obliged to pay for costs after the death, after he moved into the new home. My point is, whatever the value of the home at the time of his moving into it, whether it was with repairs or without repairs, he's not responsible to fix anything that was problematic in the home before then.
Well, he is, because he made an agreement to be responsible for him. That's what the agreement says.
Well, that's my problem. The language. That's why I was asking what the language of the agreement was, and I'll have to take a look at it.
And language of the agreement also says he's going to take care of the repair and maintenance. There's other issues too, but I don't think we're going to get to them.
I'll have to take a look at that agreement. I'm sure the other judges have already seen it, but I thought this was the agreement because that's the way it was described in the addendum, as you apparently thought it was too, but apparently this is not the agreement that we need to be looking at.
It's not our addendum, no. And the agreement is...
Is it more detailed than this?
It's a separate document that's signed by the parties.
Is it more detailed than this as to...
Yes.
All right, well, we'll have to look at that. Yeah, I'll tell you, if this is the agreement and this is the only agreement, then it seems to me...
You mean if the order is the only agreement?
Right. If the order accurately describes verbatim what is in the agreement, it seems to me problematic to assume that Mr. Mathias was agreeing to pay for costs that were incurred before he moved into the Ridgewood home. If the goal is to put the parties in the same position they were in after the agreement that they were in before.
No, they're not trying to put him in the same position. Mathias didn't want to leave the house.
No, I understand that. No, I get that.
Well, let me finish if I could. And now we're talking about he's complaining that he has to be responsible for maintenance and upkeep. Well, that was the deal he made, so that he could stay there rather than go to a different house, and in order to avoid the eviction.
Can I ask?
Sure, please.
Okay.
I'm out of time. Sorry.
is this okay, Judge Flory?
Okay. You're muted, Judge Flory.
Go ahead, Judge Siegel.
Okay. So is there anything in the record about what repairs were necessary at the time that Mr. Mathias moved into the house versus what accrued after he's in the house? And then how long has he lived in this Ridgewood house?
Well, he's now lived in the Ridgewood house since his wife died. She was out of the house in hospice, I think, for 2 weeks before she died, or maybe a little bit longer. And then he immediately moved in when she died, even though she was in a different facility. Now, let me see if I handled all of your question. What was the rest of it?
Is there anything in the record about what repairs were needed for the house at the time he moved in versus, you know, what became apparent later?
Yeah, the judge's order in January actually lists a number of things that he's supposed to repair. There are also indications in the agreement with Mathias that he took a long time to negotiate with his father that got signed in, and I don't have the date right in front of me, but I do. April 30th and May 2nd. There's a hearing and settlement agreement, terms of the transfer of the money, and then May 30th, I beg your pardon. And then April 30th, the hearing on the settlement agreement, and May 2nd, the stipulated order came out. So these are things that he agreed to specifically after months of negotiation and making this change and making that change.
Well, that was the heart of my question. I was, and forgive me, I just was under the impression that since it was described as the agreement, you and I had the same understanding that this was the agreement, but you're saying there's a more thorough document in the record indicating what it is he was agreeing to pay for.
Absolutely.
That matters.
All right. I think that takes care of the questions that were asked. Time is expired. And so we will, and Mr. Mathias, the record will reflect, Mr. Mathias never did make an appearance at the hearings here today. So we will take this matter under advisement and we will issue our decision within the statutory timeframe. And we stand adjourned on this matter. Thank you.
Thank you.